Have an iPad, an iPhone, or an iPod Touch? You can now access this podcast on demand wherever you are, anytime through the PRI app. Listen to recent episodes or catch the world and other PRI programs live each day while on the go. Search under PRI in the iTunes App Store or simply click the link at theworld.org.
Hi, everybody. This is episode 11 of Talking Travel, the show that takes you to those fascinating places where news and travel intersect. I'm Clark Boyd with Public Radio International's The World. The World is an international news program co-produced by the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Radio in Boston. Find out more at theworld.org. Remember, you can always find relevant links, pictures, and videos for this episode and all episodes of Talking Travel at theworld.org/travel. And that's also the place where you can sign up to get each episode of this podcast delivered directly to your email inbox. How convenient is that? Okay, joining me as always to talk travel is Robert Reed, U.S. editor of Lonely Planet, the print and digital travel publisher. Robert, welcome back.
Hi, Clark.
And from Lonely Planet's London office, Tom Hall is with us. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Okay, guys, we're going to talk sex.
What?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know. The download numbers are sure to increase now.
I thought we were talking about folding techniques. I'm sorry.
Well,
much more exciting topic.
I'm sorry. I'm going to make you switch gears a little bit here. We had an interesting item that we aired on the show recently about Iceland. So let's take a listen to that as a start.
Greece is not the only European country experiencing severe economic problems. Iceland has had some of its own. They include billions in unpaid debts and a banking collapse. Even so, lawmakers in Iceland had another pressing matter to deal with: strip clubs. This week, they voted to ban strip clubs from their island nation. Gudrun Jonsdottir is with the organization Stigmat in Iceland. They provide information against sexual violence and help push parliament into the ban on strip clubs. Ms. Jonsdottir, why did lawmakers in Iceland decide to enforce this ban?
Yeah, I understand that this may sound strange to you, because strip clubs may sound innocent and acceptable. But in Iceland, we had the porn industry entering with a huge force 10 years ago. And at the time, we got 13 so-called strip clubs with foreign women coming from poor countries. We got at least 1,000 women coming. And let me remind you that the whole population of Iceland is 330,000 inhabitants. So we entered one foreign woman from a poor country to dance at the clubs for every 100 Icelandic men. Those women were not here all at the same times. And although it sounds innocent to come there dancing, the income of the clubs came from what was called the so-called private dancing, where the man could buy privacy with the women, and then you can imagine what happens.
Is the intention then ultimately to ban prostitution as well? Is this kind of like an overture to that?
What we already did last summer was to criminalize the buying of women in prostitution. We are the third country in the world to do that after Sweden and Norway. So we have already criminalized buying women, but what we were doing now is closing the stores that sell access to women.
How many strip clubs are there in Iceland?
Now they are about 3 or 4, depending on how you define them.
Iceland, for a lot of people, is a socially liberal sort of place, but I think the way you've been describing this legislation, the motivation is pretty clear. Half of all politicians, almost half of all politicians in Iceland are women. Did that make a difference?
I'm sure it does make a difference, but we have had opinion polls about how the population of Iceland think about prostitution and the women in prostitution. And we have this conscious awareness that there is a strong connection between violence and prostitution. And the opinion poll from 2007 showed that there was a majority in every political party for criminalizing the buying of women, because of our understanding of what is involved in all this.
Are there any Icelanders upset with this ban?
Yeah, of course there are. There's a huge market for women, as you must understand when you see that we brought in all those women 10 years ago. And those who are willing to buy and those who don't care about the situation of the women they are buying, they want to be able to continue to buy women.
You know, in countries like the U.S. and the U.K., other places too, a debate kind of rages as to whether stripping and prostitution are degrading or empowering to women. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like Iceland really buys this post-feminist empowerment argument.
No, we don't. Neither do the other Nordic countries. We are both Sweden and Norway have criminalized buying of women because of the strong connection between sexual violence and what happens within the porn industry.
Gudrun Jonsdottir with the organization Stigmat in Iceland. Very good to speak with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
So one question off the back of that interview, guys, I wasn't quite clear on is Iceland widely considered to be one of these kind of lurid destinations where people go for this kind of thing?
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah. Iceland, is somewhere that's a real sort of natural wonderland, though there is an incongruity in there. You'll find volcanoes, glaciers, towering waterfalls, but you'll also find Reykjavik, which is a pretty racy town in one way or another. It has a well-known pub crawl where people do go and get very, very drunk long into the night. It has a raucous nightlife all over the place. And Iceland also does have some very well-noted music festivals, but as a naughty destination, I think not.
Robert, it's not widely considered here in the States to be that kind of destination either, is it?
Definitely not. I mean, I think more people are starting to think about how you can head to Europe and kind of stop off and have a few days in Iceland, particularly with its exchange rate to what it is, and it becomes more affordable for Americans. So people connect it with music. You know, the Iceland Airwaves Festival in October is big, and Bjork and things like that. And going to the Blue Lagoon, which is kind of Iceland's Eiffel Tower outside of Reykjavik, where you sit by a geothermal plant and vast black lava field and in a pool that's at like 38 degrees Celsius constantly. So it's not anything that's necessarily connected with that. The only thing that has any kind of worry is whether or not you're going to get too drunk on Saturdays during that pub crawl.
What one thing that the good people of Iceland aren't very keen to tell you is that the Blue Lagoon, the water in there, is actually the runoff from the local geothermal power station. Mm. So it's kind of already been used and recycled. It's quite clean, quite safe to bathe in, and the mud has quite wonderful properties for your skin, apparently. But you are bathing next to a big power station, just to fill you in on that one.
Now, I've never been there. Have either of you been to the Blue Lagoon then and taken a dip?
I have. It's a pretty spectacular place, as is all of Iceland. And the more you venture around it, the more you think, gosh, you know, is this the land of Lord of the Rings that I'm looking at? Of course, that was filmed in New Zealand, but certainly in terms of having a spectacular landscape, Iceland is the place.
So that story was about Iceland shutting down striptease clubs, that particular thing. I also read recently where Amsterdam was cracking down on their infamous red light district and even limiting the availability of cannabis and some of their hash bars and things like that. Is the lurid destination in Europe a thing of the past?
I was in Amsterdam in December, and one of the things that is very striking the more you look around Amsterdam is how much the red light district, the sort of seedy area with strip joints and cannabis bars, that kind of thing, how much of a contrast there is between that and the area around it, which has really gentrified and become an extremely pleasant place to spend a little bit of time. Everywhere you go in Amsterdam, you find these lovely cafes and nice little bars to sit around. People are tootling around on bicycles, and then suddenly, smack, there you are in this area, which not only by night is full of bucks parties and groups of revelers from all over Europe who are really, really drunk, but it's also... The buildings are in quite bad condition, and it's some of the oldest properties that you'll find anywhere in Amsterdam. So it's not really a surprise that the authorities are saying, maybe we just want to change this a little bit, because maybe 20 years ago, the whole place felt a little bit rough and ready. Now it really stands out like a bit of a sore thumb. So just maybe in certain places, certain historic places, the authorities want to turn it down. I would say, though, that there are plenty of other places in Europe you can go to for a little bit of smut, if you so want to.
It reminds me a little of here in New York City. You know, the first time that I came here in the early 90s, I got out at Port Authority, and I walked down 42nd Street past all these adult theaters and peep shows and various novelty shops that I would not want to go into with my mom, let's say. And a taxi driver pulled over and started yelling at a pregnant woman and threatening her with a stick, and I was going, wow, this is really New York. That has changed completely what that scene that you would have seen on 42nd Street. Once there was a couple dozen of these shops, now there's zero. And so this is, a lot of people criticize it, like Times Square, 42nd Street, around Times Square has become Disneyfied. A lot of people like it, though, because it is, you're not going to be threatened with a stick most likely anymore. And so it, you know, it's not like it's gone away. There's that happens and exists in various places in New York City, but it's been pushed out of this area, which is seen as a big tourist attraction. It's been controversial, but it's certainly had an effect on how people see that area.
And it's been interesting in London, the area around King's Cross Railway Station. There's sort of lots of the big railway termini in London are all on the same street, the Euston Road. And King's Cross was always an area that was thought of as being quite seedy, lots of the shops that Robert's talking about. And the whole area has kind of been dragged up on it, by its ankles and said, no, you will become gentrified. And lots of the no good types who were previously around there have been booted out. Well, where have they gone? Well, the bad news for me is they've come quite near to where I live now, so I wasn't really expecting that. These things don't tend to go away too much. They just tend to go somewhere else. In some cases, they're dispersed. In some cases, they change slightly. But, you can still find, late-night bars and strip clubs and that kind of thing. But I also think that maybe people's tastes have moved on a little bit, and we want to explore destinations in Europe in a slightly different way than how we used to when it was all fresh and a bit novel. And even, young travellers who would have at one point made up the stock in trade of those coffee bars, those hash bars in Amsterdam, are now saying, yeah, that's okay, but really, there's more to the city than that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to work that out in my own head about a place like Amsterdam, which, I went to when I was a lot younger. And experienced that in a certain way, and now I've been back as I'm older, and I'm experiencing it in a different way, and I'm trying to figure out how much is it that the city itself has changed, or how much is it that I've changed and what I'm looking for, because I see Amsterdam now, and I go there, and I think, wow, what a beautiful place. Would love to take my family there. There's plenty of things there for families to do.
Bike around.
Yeah.
One of the challenges in this issue for me is I travel a lot by myself. I calculated recently I spent 14 months cumulative on the road in the last 5 years. And what happens is that sometimes as a solo male traveler, a lot of people assume you are there for various lurid purposes, and that can be tiresome, And so you sometimes you're traveling anonymously. You don't want people to know that you're a travel writer, et cetera, but they kind of have this, and this comes out. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with the bizarre offers that happen on the Russian trains. There's a prostitute going carriage to carriage, and you have to politely and kind of scared say no thank you, and they go on, and that kind of happens a lot around the world. In Southeast Asia there's these like hugging bars, and I remember a number of years ago in Vietnam there was a woman official that joined the government in Hanoi and suggested that they become illegal and that they crack down on these hugging bars. This is where men go and they drink beer and they kind of get coddled a little bit by women, and sometimes it leads to various acts outside of the bar itself. And the people there laughed and said, well, you'd have to arrest everyone here in the government because we all go. And, and this was in the news. And so there is a lot of that even when it's not legal. I mean, Singapore, you can't chew gum, supposedly, or you can't buy gum. But there is a red light district there that is tolerated. So you see this in a lot of places, but sometimes kind of lurking out of the main centers. And maybe that's a little bit of what's happening in Iceland. I don't know.
I can't help but think that red light districts around the world need to have a kind of boutique makeover, in the same way that hotels, which maybe people are saying, God, that hotel is really old-fashioned, and now you find these hotels with fluffy white dressing gowns and sleek and nicely designed Philippe Starck interiors, that kind of thing. Maybe strip clubs just need to up their game a little bit. Maybe they are all a bit tawdry and a bit 1980s. I can think of quite a few that are quite near this studio in central London that, not that I know them myself, I hasten
to say. Of course not.
But, maybe they just need to become a bit more fashionable. I don't know. He says with tongue firmly planted in cheek.
Have you been to Utrecht in the Netherlands?
Yes.
And I understand the red light district there is floating. all on houseboats. On houseboats.
How well do you know about
it's,
it?
You know, many things in cities in the Netherlands are on water. Simply, there isn't a huge amount of land in the Netherlands, and a little bit like Venice, if they want some more, they just build a load of stuff on water, and sometimes if they don't have the money to do that, everything happens in a boat.
Oh, there you go. We've got a new tagline there for the Netherlands. Anything and everything that can be done on a boat. All right. I think that'll wrap it up for this episode. Tom Hall from Lonely Planet in London, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And Robert Reed from Lonely Planet's New York office, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Clark.
Remember, you can follow up on stories you hear about here on the podcast at theworld.org/travel. We'll post links, pictures, and videos for each episode. Again, the show notes are at theworld.org/travel. In Boston, this is Clark Boyd. We'll be back again soon with another episode of Talking Travel.